accession number 20609, reel 1.
Eddie Treacher, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
I was born in Shoreditch, London.
Which year was this?
The 31st of the 10th, 1922.
Did you grow up and have your schooling in Shoreditch?
Yes, I did. As a matter of fact, I went to, first of all, when I was a youngster, I went to Redford Street School. That's when I was a junior. And when I became 11 years old, I went to a school called St John's Road School. And from there, I went to London, and went to London Oxford House School.
But you said that you really come from Tottenham.
Yes. Well, when I was 13, my mother moved to Tottenham from Shoreditch. And I went to another school called Ridley Avenue School in Tottenham.
How old were you when you finished your schooling?
I was 14 years old.
In 36?
Yes. 1936. 36, yeah. I was 14 years old.
Did you get a job?
Yes. When I was a youngster, I got a job in a timber yard. And I learnt to tally wood, tally timber. I learned to measure the timber and also to grade timber. And that was my job throughout my career till I joined the services.
Had you joined TA before the war?
No, I had nothing to do with the TA at all.
Did you hear Neville Chamberlain declare war on Germany?
Yes, as a matter of fact I did, and I was with a friend of mine by the name of Charlie Cannon. And in actual fact, I was round his house, living, you know, playing round his house with the boys, like, and we heard it, and then of course the siren started going, and we was wondering what it was all about, but they told us it was an air raid, and it was a false alarm, so that was that, like, you know.
Did you at that age have any feelings about the declaration of war?
I don't think I did, but we didn't understand what war was all about in that time. You know, I didn't have any feelings at all.
Were you in any early bombing of England by the German Air Force?
Yes, there was, Tottenham did get bombed. A place called Stony South, they were dropping landmines on it. And of course we had to go to work next day and everything was flattened. But we still went to work.
Stony South?
Stony South.
What's that?
That's a little area where we called Stony South, with an area of houses. That is the place.
And was it inhabited at that time?
Yes, there was quite a lot of casualties and deaths in that area. Quite a lot.
What was your own address during the bombing?
My own address was 12 Great Cambridge Road, Tottenham N17.
Did any bombs fall near your house?
No. No bombs fell near our house at all. But one night we was in the air raid shelter, and in a back garden, and there was such a crash of a noise of, as though bombs were falling, but in actual fact, it was an AK-AT gun on a lorry, and it was firing at the aircraft. We thought it was bombs falling.
Apart from that, did you have any frightening experiences in the bombing?
Not really, not at all. Where I was working at M.A. Morris's, the timber yard, the aircraft used to come over and they used to have the dogfights over our firm. And I did see a couple of ankles shot down over our yard. But we never stopped work. We just carried on. There was fighting in the sky.
What was public morale like in the Blitz?
Very good. Very good. They were definitely very good.
Was there any question of using tube stations for shelter in your area?
No, I never did, because we weren't near a tube station anyway. And I used to sleep under the stairs in our house, because we weren't getting that much bombing over our area. Most of it was in the London area.
How could you cope with sleeping under the stairs? Was it comfortable?
Oh yes, we had a mattress under the staircase and it was okay. That was my little place I used to dive into, and I was well happy with it.
You could get to sleep?
Oh yeah, I got to sleep. I used to sleep through it sometimes. It didn't worry me too much.
Did you listen to a wireless in those days?
Yes. Yes, I did.
What would you listen to?
Well, anything that was going on. We just got to listen to all the dance music and things like that. You know, it's one of these things. We like to try and cheer ourselves up in some way. Like, you know, I think at the time it was Henry Hall or something. I don't know. I can't remember quite.
Would you listen to any VIP speaking?
Yes. When Mr. Churchill came on the radio, we used to listen to that. Yeah, definitely. All the speeches we used to listen to.
What effect did Churchill have?
A good morale boosting effect with where I was concerned, because I thought the man was great, and he really boosted our morale. I felt good after it.
What about Haw Haw?
Well, I mean, it was a joke. And that's what I thought, it was a joke, because I didn't believe the things that's supposed to be happening. I just didn't think the British could be like that.
But you did listen to him?
Oh, I did listen to him if I could, yeah, because it actually I thought he was like a comedian, because he used to tell so many funny things that you just could not believe what he was talking about.
Did you think the Germans might win the war?
No, I never thought that they would win the war. I knew that we'd be struggling, and I never thought the war would last as long as it did. I thought it could be all over in no time, although we were getting pushed back in France. I still thought that we were still capable of winning the war.
What was the attitude towards the Germans during the bombing?
Well, we didn't like them much, obviously. I mean, you know, they was killing some of our people. But I was glad, and I was very glad, when we were able to bomb them. Because, in my opinion, they didn't go for military targets. What they did, they were killing human beings. They were killing people that weren't, had anything to do with the bombing.
Did you come across crime during the Blitz and the blackout?
No, not at all.
So you did you not come across any looting of bomb shops or anything like that?
No, I didn't really. I mean, the shops were bombed out, but I didn't really come across any looting. Not where I was concerned, anyway.
How did you come to be in the forces yourself?
I was working in a timber yard at Ware, Hertfordshire, because our timber was taken away from London because of the bombing, and we moved it out to Ware in Hertfordshire, and I had to go out there to work. So I got a train every morning to Hertfordshire to do my work, which I was a timber measurer inspector, and we was measuring timber for ammunition boxes, which was beech. And we used to do this all the time, like, you know.
Was that a reserved occupation?
Yes, and it was a reserved occupation. Then I got a letter from the War Office to say that I got to report to Edgware Road for a medical for the forces. So that was I wanted to go anyway. So anyway, I went to Edgware Road because I wanted to go in the Navy. So I get there, and it's a Naval and Royal Marines. So I goes in there, and they said to me, like, I passed my medical, and they said, okay, fine, we'll give you an interview. I went in to see a chap sitting at the desk, a naval man, and standing beside him was a Marine sergeant with his sash, red sash across, and he says to me, right, you've passed your medical. He said, you passed your intelligence test. So I said, thank you, sir. Right. And he said to me, now, what would you like to be in the Navy? So I said to him, well, I'd like to be a stoker because I've got a friend as a stoker. So he said to me, why do you want to be a stoker? I said, because this is a thing I've always had in my mind on. Right. So he said, don't you want to be an able seaman? So I said, not really. I said, I want to be a stoker. Oh, okay then. He said, I'll see you later on. And he said, I'll do my best. He said, but you sure you don't want to be an able seaman? I said, no, sir. I said, I want to be a stoker. I was determined to become a stoker. Okay, we'll do our best for you. 2 months later, I got a letter. Dear Mr. Treacher, we're very sorry we can't put you in the Navy, but we're going to put you in the next best thing, His Majesty's Royal Marines. And I wasn't very happy about that, I can assure you. I imagine all these big white pith helmets on, and you know, and it didn't do me no good. And my father said, that's lovely, Ed. He said, I think you ought to go and serve your country. I said, well, I don't really want to go in the Marines, Dad. Like, so he said, go there, boy. He said, serve your country. He said, so I said, all right, I'll go. And I did.
What had put you off the Marines?
I don't know. It's something about them. They were too smart, I think. I think they were, you know, I looked at them, I thought, oh, have I got to suffer that? Like, you know. But I'm glad I went. And let me tell you, I was very glad I went.
So what was the next step?
Well, the next step was the call-up. I was called up to go to Lympston, Devon, the commando depot. Again, in actual fact, it was a Marine depot at that time. And I went to station, Waterloo Station, and there I met Derek Capery and another chap called Georgie Hall, who later got killed. But I met Derek, got on the train, went to Exeter, got off at Exeter, got the commando train that goes by the Lympston depot. They call that a commando train. We got off there, we all got, a sergeant came down and met us, and we walked up the hill to the office, and we went through, give our name, and he gave us a squad number. My number was POX111881. I can always remember it, I'll always remember it. And then he gave us a squad number, which was 314 squad. Derek was in Superior on a 4 squad with me. So there we trained. We trained for 6 weeks at Lympston, Devon. And
what was it like?
Very, very strict. Very strict. But the thing about it was, you were classed as a gentleman. You wasn't some bit of scum, not in the Marines. When we first lined up in the Marines, the sergeant said to us, that, gentlemen, he said, now you are in the Marines and you are gentlemen. So I thought to myself, that was very nice, and it made me feel good.
Did you learn much at Lympston?
Did I learn much?
Yes.
Well, I mean, as far as discipline was concerned, I was quite disciplined at home. You know, my parents were very strict. And I got on quite well. I everything that I did, you know, it was done right. And all my equipment was kept very good and very clean, because I was used to being clean. But they were strict, because on parade, if you're not on parade on time, they used to tell us that it's better to be 10 minutes early and 1 second late, otherwise you're on a charge. Which, I can understand that.
Could you cope with what they expected you to do?
Yes, quite comfortable, quite comfortable.
And then what?
Well, then we had our drill, we went on the drill parades, learning to handle our rifles, and we're doing drill. Then we went on to the 2-2 range, learning to shoot, but only with 2-2 rifles, not with 303, because that was a smaller caliber bullet. And I found that I could shoot. I was a pretty good shot. And I come top in the squad at shooting with Derek, and we're both the same. So,
where did you go to after Limston?
Well, after Limston, we'd done our 6 weeks training, and you know, with and had our photo taken with 314 squad, and we'd done our 6 weeks training, and then went to the 5th Battalion Royal Marines. They were in a place called Pollock Shields in Scotland. They had just come back from Africa, North Africa.
What impression did the unit make on you at first?
Well, in actual fact, what we did, when we first went up there, we became E Troop. There was A, B, C, D, or A company, because we was a reserve company to them. And what we had to do, we had to do our training with the 5th Battalion, but then after 3 or 4 weeks, we were put into different troops, or companies at that time. And Derek went to A company, I went to B company. We went to different companies, and then we settled in with the rest of the commander, or the rest of the battalion at that time, which was called the 5th Battalion. So, and then, of course, we got training with them. Then, after that, after we was in Scotland, we came down south. We moved away from Scotland. We come down south. And I think we went to a place called Carmarthen. And the camp was Eastwood Camp. The Poles had had this camp and left it in a terrible state, but we cleaned it all up, and, you know.
In what way was it in such a terrible state?
Well, they when they moved out, they left all rubbish all over the show, and because that didn't suit the Royal Marines. But we left, but and that was opposite a Cowangate milk factory.
What were you doing at Carmarthen?
The usual thing, training, route marches, things like that, you know. But and we had sport, we was having football, they had a lovely football pitch in the middle of the camp, but that's about all. We weren't used too much, the battalions of the Marines. We weren't used too much at all. We didn't get much action, you know. We was kept, and at one time, Mr. Churchill said to the Marines, he said that we, the Marines, would be kept as the sheet anchor. If there is an invasion, the Marines would be the sheet anchor of the British Army. We would be the main people to fight.
How did you feel about not being used so much?
Well, we weren't very happy. We weren't very happy about it, but we just had to do what we had to do, and that was the finish of it, like, you know. But none of us were very happy about it, because we felt that we should be used in some way or not.
Any other memories of being at Carmarthen?
Yes, we did have a big exercise in Carmarthen, in the Black Mountains of Wales. There's all the actual battalion went, and we had some Americans with us, and they was up there for the exercise. We went into the Black Mountains, and from the day we moved in, it was a 5-day exercise, and from the day we moved in, it rained and it rained and it rained. You'd never believe the rain there was. And we was marching across the Black Mountains, and many, many of the Americans fell out. They didn't like it at all. They didn't like it at all, but we lasted it. But in the end, they had to abort the exercise because everybody was so wet that they just couldn't carry on.
How did your health stand up to it?
Very well. I don't think I ever had a cold or anything. You know, it was one of those things that we were so fit, I think, that we could stand that type of weather.
Were you well fed?
Oh, yes. We was always well fed. We was always well fed. So.
What are your next memories?
Well, then we left Carmarthen. We went to another camp somewhere. I can't remember the camp, actual thing. But we went somewhere else. And we was actually pushed all over the show. You know, we were pushed from one camp to another camp and things. And nothing was being done for us. And nothing, there was no actions for us, anything at all. Nothing at all. And, of course, later on, in 1943, I think it was, we went to a place called Burley. In 1943, we went to a place called Burley. And there we done a bit of training. And then it come through that the 5th Battalion was now going to become 45 Royal Marine Commando.
So this and is in the New Forest, is it?
That was in the New Forest, yeah, Burley. So we were going to become the 5th Battalion was going to become 45 Commando. So they lined each troop up, like, you know, A, B, C, D, E, F. And my troop, B troop, we had a sergeant come along, and he said to me, like, Tom, like, called me Tommy. He said, what do you want, commandos or boats? So before he'd come along, we'd all said, let's say boats, just for a laugh. So he came along, so he said to me, what do you want, Tom? So I said, boats, please, Sergeant. So he said to me, do what? I said, boats. So he said, no way are you going to see boats. He said to the corporal, Tommy Treacher, commandos. So I said, thank you very much, Sergeant. Like, you know, I said, but I do want to go to commandos. And that's the sort of thing we did, like, you know.
Why did you think that it would be a laugh to say boats?
Pardon?
Why did you think it would be a laugh to say boats?
Well, because we knew very well. We knew very well the sergeant would say, you know, commandos, you. But anyway, he took it all in good part. So that's what it was all about.
So it was a kind of leg pull?
Yeah, it was a leg pull, yeah. It was a bit funny, so we did. We just did that. And of course, then from there we moved up into Ayrshire, Scotland. We moved to Ayrshire, went to Ayr, Scotland, and to go to the training camp at Achnacurry. So that would be for our main training. We went to Achnacurry, that was the Army Training Centre for commandos. So we got in civvy billets in Ayr. We were in civvy billets with a Mrs. Lawson. Very nice lady. And on the 23rd of November, we went to the training camp at Achnacurry, and my God, we went by train, and when we got out of the train, it was cold, it was miserable, it was snowy, and we had to march to the camp, and that was a 7-mile march, and we marched into the camp, and lo and behold, 45 Commando were under canvas. It was freezing cold. It was. Oh, and I thought, oh no. Right, and of course, we settled down, and we had our instructor come along, and we were doing night marches, we were doing route marches, we were doing rifle training, we were doing bayonet charges, landing from the sea or from the locks, and also we were doing what they call a death slide. We went up into a high tree and there was a rope across the river. But nowadays you see the Marines, they've got a toggle with a wheel on it. But we didn't. We had what they call toggle ropes, what they make bridges with. It's a rope with a loop at one end and a toggle at the other end. And you fit them together and you can make a bridge across a river. And we used to use these toggle ropes to slide down across the river. And we'd dip them in the water, throw them over the top, when we got up the top, throw them over, and then slide across. Well, the water acted as a something that stops you from sticking. So down we go. But you get some clever bod, he'd get on, put it on, and he'd get stuck halfway. And you'd never seen anything like it in your life, because that was a big joke. Everybody was a laugh, and they'd fall off of this into the river. But what they had, it's a running river, but they had a bridge further up with a net, a scramble net. And the blokes used to float along and get out with a scramble net. Let's get out all right. But we used to be quite good. And then there's another thing we used to do. We used to do a rope across the river, and we used to crawl along it. We would put one foot over, have our body along it, and pull ourselves across. And they'll get one, the sergeant will say, right, first one on, he'd go on. And as the bloke was going across, he'd say, second one on, third one on. And of course, everybody's pulling at different times, you know, pulling themselves across it. And of course, it's swinging. And many a bloke fell off of that because of that, you know, or just dangling on it. Like, we had quite a few laughs. Although it was hard training, we had quite a few laughs.
And so on the death slide, would you put the two ends of the rope together?
Yeah, we'd put the toggle through the little loop and hold it like that. Put it in the water, put it over the top and slide down. And that was what we did. And I used to enjoy it quite. We used to come down at some pace, I could tell you. We'd hit the other side, it had sandbags the other side, where you stop yourself, like, you know. But it was quite good, quite good. Then also they had the rope climb, and that was all through the trees, and we used to climb through the trees when, you know, overhand monkey swing and get those, and that was hard. Also we had a Sergeant Bissell. Now Sergeant Bissell was a character. He was a physical training instructor up there. He was a black belt of judo and he was a muscle man, believe me. As a matter of fact, he just died at 90 odd. He was a muscle man. And he'd say to us, he'd get us out, and it was all snow on the ground, and it was cold. And he'd get us out there, and he'd say, right, lads, take your shirts off. Ah, you can imagine, take your shirts off. I was like a little weedy thing there standing there. So we took our shirts off, and he'd say, sit down, stand up, sit down, and we're in this snow. So you can imagine how we felt. We felt horrible, like, but that is what he did. Get down, stand up, sit down, stand up. But anyway, that was that, like, you know, but he was getting us fit. We were getting very fit. There's no doubt about it. And the next thing we'd go into the arena, there was a boxing ring. And we used to have what they call, we used to set a team each side. And we said, two of us used to get in, knock hell out of one another, and we did used to knock hell out of one another, get out after a minute, and next two used to get in, next two, next two, next two, and we kept on hitting one right. But I had a bloke who I knew who was a boxer, and he said, don't worry, Tom, if I get in with you, he said, I won't hit you hard. So I said, all right, we should meet with, and he did. He said, you can hit me, it doesn't make a difference. He said, but I won't hit you too hard. But it was a real laugh. We used to have a real laugh. Then when that was finished, we had a demonstration of knife fighting. Now that was good, knife fighting. How to use a knife, how to kill with one blow of a knife, how to slit a throat, everything like that.
How do you do that?
Well, what we do, the way we had to do it, I honestly didn't have anything, I didn't ever do it. But they come up behind a German. You know that the Germans all had their helmet strapped on. They would pull their helmet back and then just slit their throat. But I don't know anybody that's ever done it.